Welcome to the Holistic Baby and Toddler Sleep Podcast. I'm your host, Georgina Winderbank, a qualified naturopath, a holistic sleep consultant, a mother to a little boy, and I have been pregnant 4 times. At the Holistic Sleep Project and through my membership, The Sleep Collective, I have helped countless families locally and internationally resolve their sleep issues, which affect not just babies and toddlers, but the entire family unit and how smoothly it functions. My approach is unique as it is completely holistic, just like the naturopathic philosophy. Naturopathy and holistic sleep together create a deeper understanding between the philosophy of sleep and its relationship to other crucial parts of child development. In this podcast, you will learn plenty of solutions and gain an abundance of knowledge so you can confidently tackle any sleep challenge that comes your way. These discussions will address child sleep as well as nutrition, emotional well-being, resilience, and experiencing family loss and trauma. This is an informative, thought-provoking podcast about pregnancy, parenting, and of course, sleep. I am so glad you're here as we navigate together one of the toughest jobs in the world and reduce sleep deprivation in the process. Let's get started. Welcome to the Holistic Baby and Toddler Sleep Podcast. Episode 9 is something I am so incredibly passionate about, and that is about the content and the timing of your child's meals and how they can optimize both sleep and development. Time and time again, I see families unaware and not understanding the relationship between feeding both milk feeds and solids to sleep, as well as development. And it's one of the key things I do in my work, along with many other aspects that I have when it comes to creating age-appropriate quality sleep. But this is one of the things I really feel passionate about, I guess because I see, obviously I'm a qualified naturopath and nutritionist, so I know how important nutrition is and I know how optimal it means that we can function and grow and develop. But I also see incredible results once we've amended a feeding schedule or a solid schedule, and we're placing the food and the milk feeds at the right times. I see incredible results. I see longer sleeps. I see happier babies, less grizzly babies. Growth and development continues on really well or enhances. I see some really great things. So I am incredibly passionate about this topic, and I'm going to share with you some things that we can improve about this topic and how we can make things so that they're optimizing both our feeding alongside our nutrition of our babies and our toddlers and preschoolers. So let's begin. As soon as we have our babies, they find their way up our chest to feed, often for a very long time the first time. Soon after that, they may nod off and have a very long sleep. And the feeding and the sleeping dance has begun. And it continues all through toddlerhood and even to preschoolers. In fact, their entire lives. The relationship between milk feeds or solids and sleep is underrated and often not acknowledged after the newborn stage. During this stage, there is definitely a focus on sleeping and feeding, and we get asked by our maternal child health nurse about this, and they assess how we're going. They might say things like, how are the feeds going? How is your little one sleeping? That doesn't necessarily invite a big question. It might be good, not good. It might be a really brief answer. And then what do we do if the answer is not good? They might refer us to a lactation consultant. I've never heard of people in that system necessarily referring to a sleep consultant, but they may refer to sleep school. So there's some options along the way. But after that newborn stage, when we do have an awareness about the importance of the relationship between feeding and sleep, after that, that seems to fade away, and there's not necessarily an understanding that these two concepts support each other. Through my sleep work, I use the foundation as a naturopathy picture, and I refer to the relationship between feeding and sleep as synergistic. The definition of synergistic is that the interaction of two agents to have a combined effect greater than the sum of their separate effects. So if we only have one of these elements going well, this is only part of the picture.
And things could be a lot better if we have both of these elements working well and working together. The key elements to feeding and sleep are around the placement or the timing of the feeds. As newborns, there is very little structure to these, let's face it. It's all about feeding on demand and fulfilling our baby's needs whenever they need their needs met, and no matter what those needs are. We may be doing top-up feeds, we might do full feeds, or we might be doing snack feeding, all sorts of feeding amounts, all sorts of sleeping amounts as well, as they could be doing cat naps, which is absolutely age appropriate for younger babies. Or they might be doing longer sleep stints of sleep, especially as they get older. After 4 months of age, I see the families who have sleep challenges and they're struggling to settle their babies during the day as well as at night. And often it presents that they're feeding all through the night still, which is something that really should be still happening in the early days, but not necessarily after months and months. Older babies are what I'm referring to here. Older babies should be taking the majority of their calories during the day, and often it's the opposite when I see them when they're having trouble, and this is known as reverse cycling. The babies that are feeding very regularly through the night aren't feeding for nutrition as their older babies, but for the sucking mechanism to get to sleep. You may be in this case, and this seems to be the majority of cases that I see in my work, is those that are feeding a lot overnight, be it an 8-month-old, a 12-month-old, any age that's feeding a lot. It could be hourly, 2 hourly, 6 times a night, whatever it may be. That's the majority of people that I see who have these issues with the timing of feeds through a 24-hour period. So this particular example that I've explained poses 3 issues for family, at least. The first one is they're not getting full feeds. So they're constantly needing to feed to get these small amounts of nutrition to sustain them, and the cycle continues. Or they may establish a feed to sleep association, which is the only or the main way that their baby can be soothed and put to sleep. They may only sleep for a short period of time because this has now become an association that is no longer working because they're getting to sleep, but then they wake up soon after and wonder why they're not still sucking. So then they're awake after 30 minutes or a very short period of time. This kind of thing can mean that that gets less and less effective over time as they get older. And the third issue that could arise if your baby's eating solids, but they're still having a lot of milk, is that it's compromising the amount of solids they're actually consuming. This is for a variety of reasons, such as the snack feeding that could be happening with breast milk or bottles. So they're not taking in enough. They're not taking full feeds, and they're also not taking in good amounts of solids, which, as I mentioned, for an older baby or a toddler, the majority of the calories should be coming from food. They may start to prefer the bottle or the breast because of what they're used to, and it's also less work for a baby or a child to have milk rather than actually eat. And the timing of the milk feeds and the solids are definitely in relation to each other. So if you're having a milk feed too close to a meal, you will find that they don't want to eat the food because they're too full from the milk. So the most common mistakes that I see parents make is around the relationship between milk feeds and solids and the timing of these elements in relation to sleep. So 3 main presentations that I see in terms of feeding and solids and how they impact each other may go something like this. Your little one wakes up and is given a milk feed, and then they're offered solids soon after. The baby doesn't take much in the way of solids, and the parents report a fussy baby, or they offer another milk feed very soon after that because they didn't take much solids in. And that's obviously because they're offering the solids too close to the milk, which we will get to shortly. Another presentation is that parents offer milk very often, but don't necessarily focus on the intake of the solids as well. And this is where I'm obviously talking about older babies. They become a bit too reliant on milk, or they still, I guess, in a way, treat them like younger babies, and they continue to offer milk rather than starting to introduce solids and increase those solids as time goes on. They really do remain in the milk feed situation. Babies might also show less interest in solids because their affinity becomes for milk, and this is due to the ease and what they're used to, and parents will continue to support this preference. Other mistakes that I see very commonly are that parents don't have set times in their baby's day when they offer solids. It might be really random, and this is because their sleep is random. This is because their day is random. So if you have a baby who's, let's say, ideally doing 3 naps, but you're doing 5 naps because they're a cat napper as an older baby, then where do you fit in the solids? Now, of course, I'm not talking about the introduction of solids. That will be only 1 offering a day, and then you might get to 2 offering a day. And at the same time, you might be doing some cat naps. But when they're a bit older, we want to be having probably by that stage, at least 3 naps. And therefore, you want to be able to know when you're offering 2 or 3 amounts of solids. This presentation is random because parents aren't prioritizing sleep. And so naps are irregular, which means eating is irregular. Another key mistake that I see parents make is offering dinner or lunch too close to the naps. I see this in pretty much all the clients that I work with. This means that they're too tired to eat. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that they're going to go to sleep at 5 p.m., but it does mean that that's when they need to eat. Because if they don't eat at around that time, depending on when their bedtime is, it's probably going to be a couple of hours before their bedtime, then they're going to be too tired to eat and they're not going to get in a good amount of solids. Then you also want to fit in a milk feed in most cases. So you're not leaving yourself much time and you're not optimizing these two elements of great amount of solids, good milk feed before bed. They will affect each other and compromise one another. So here are my tips around meal times and milk feeds. Firstly, continue to feed your baby on demand for the weeks or months up until around 4 months. And this is obviously very different for every person, depending on the health of your baby, depending on their weight, depending on the guidance and advice that you've been given. It's a very individual thing about how long you feed on demand or when you start to get a bit more of a routine into place. Personally, I had my child on a feeding routine fairly early, and that's because I wanted to start the sleep work very early. And which element works alongside sleep? Feeding, which we've learned on this podcast today. So they're the two elements because I wanted to get the sleep sorted for reasons that I've talked about in other podcasts prior to this one. That meant that I had to get more of an understanding of where the feeds were supposed to go to support sleep and so they weren't compromising each other. Once they get to around 4 months or whenever you're ready or when you want some more structure in your day, then that's when you might put them on an age-appropriate feed and sleep routine. It depends on when you've been recommended to start solids or when you feel the time is right, and then you incorporate the milk and the solids into your sleep schedule with regularity. I recommend playing around with foods until starting to play around with foods from about 5 and a half months, and then you might start to ramp it up a little bit more at 6 months, or you may not start your introduction till 6 months. And the reason that I wouldn't do it any earlier than 5 months at least is because of the immaturity of their digestive system. So in order to place the food and the milk into your sleep schedule, you need a sleep schedule. And for this, it usually means you need regular naps, possibly some signs or some encouragement towards independent sleep so that you can have regular naps. It means knowing the amount of wake time that your little one can handle and how long they need to be asleep for according to their age and their individual requirements. Then ensure a suitable amount of time between milk and solids. So I usually recommend an hour. Not so close, but possible that you can fit in both before the next sleep. Any closer, and this may affect one or the other. So usually parents milk feed first and then solids a second. So if you do them much closer or too close, then your solid intake will be affected by your milk feed. When it comes to lunch and dinner, refrain from putting them too close to sleep. And what I mean by that is that if your child's on one nap and that nap is at 12 p.m., families might start to try and feed lunch at 11:30 or even 11, or if it's dinner time is 7 o'clock, then they'll be giving dinner at 6 p.m. Most families that I work with are doing it too close, anywhere between 30 to 60 minutes before either their main sleep of the day or bedtime. Now, obviously, I'm talking about older babies or toddlers here. So you would have at least an awake time of hopefully around 3 hours. So you've got time to have your milk feed and your lunch or dinner to ensure that they're all in there before the next sleep. And we want to ensure the optimal quantity is taken and that you still have your milk feed placed accurately before bedtime. So if you don't already know, I am a qualified naturopath and nutritionist. This was my first love in the health and nutrition world, and herbs and nutrition were my go-to with after I had a really long illness, or during that illness when I was 19. For about 4 years, I was really unwell and I was let down by the medical system time and time again. After that, we turned to alternative medicine. I'd already completed my undergrad degree in communication, public relations, and marketing. And during that time, I got unwell. Second year uni it was. We went to all the doctors under the sun, of which they told me that nothing was wrong with me or that it was in my head, and they just gave me more antibiotics. My tenacious mother said to me, "Don't worry, George, we will get onto this and we will fix it ourselves. We'll do it on our own." And that we did. We juiced fresh fruit and vegetable juices. We went to a naturopath, but I think I only went once for whatever reason. I couldn't even sleep because I was so exhausted, but I still couldn't sleep. I couldn't drive a lot of the time. I barely got through my 3-hour shifts at my retail fashion job, and I felt incredibly hopeless. My uni years were passing me by without any fun and any joy. After this journey of several years, my interest sparked with naturopathy, and having I obviously recovered and I got through it thanks to my beautiful family, my mum and my dad. But the spark with naturopathy was really founded, and my passion, of which I was currently working in media and public relations, I enrolled again in another degree, a Bachelor of Health Science, Naturopathy and Nutrition. And it took me about 6 years to complete because, by then I was mature, aka 23, 24 years old. This double degree, I learned about the power of nutrition and health and the complex disease states that can be helped or resolved in some cases or part of the solution. Unfortunately, my parents were diagnosed just a few years after that with horrific terminal illnesses within just weeks of each other. And we have a saying in naturopathy, and it's called, and in fact, there's a subject in the degree called food is medicine. Sometimes this is all that the body needs to be optimally functioning again. Food as medicine can eradicate disease, or it can at least be part of the solution, as I say. I use this concept pretty much solely to recover from my 4-year illness, and it was definitely part of the strategy that my parents used in fighting their horrific diseases. But waiting for illness is not what we want. We want to start really good habits and education about eating well, and that starts with the timing of the eating and the feeding as young as babies, and it also starts with the content of what we feed our little ones. We want to have great nutrition and good timing of nutrition as young as babies for the optimal health and well-being, and to support other concepts of their physiology, such as sleep. So we've talked about the timing of food. We've talked about how solids and milk feeds are where they should be in relation to each other. We've talked about how these two types of feeding should be in relation to sleep. That's the first part, is the timing of feeds, whether it be milk or solids. The second part that I see is really crucial is about the content of the food that we feed our children. So when it comes to the type of nutrition you provide, it's crucial for a variety of reasons. One is if you provide foods that are essentially empty calories, they will be hungry soon after. The second reason it's really important to provide quality, optimal nutrition is that if you don't, then they may have a blood sugar spike, which can affect their mood and energy. And another reason for providing optimal nutrition is if we don't, They will be hungry, and that this can in turn affect their sleep. They may wake prematurely or rise early in the morning. I had a case not so long ago where a little guy, he was about 3 years old, I think, he was waking at 5:30, and he was ravenous. He was so hungry, and yet he wasn't eating dinner the night before. And that's what I was talking before about the timing. So his dinner was being placed 30 to 60 minutes before bedtime instead of the 2 hours that I recommend. So he wasn't eating very much because he was so tired. He just couldn't consume much food at that time. And then he was waking early, presenting with early rising because he was so hungry and he's ravenous. So there were some very clear indicators here that the timing was off when it comes to food. And of course, we want to optimize the content of food to make sure that that little one and all of your little ones are getting the best nutrition they can for their growth and development. In a nutshell, we want quality nutrition because it's important for mood regulation, sleeping long periods of time, optimal development of brain and physically as well. And of course, we want them to have copious amounts of energy to play and to learn. So I like to talk about the common mistakes because I do think that we can all identify ourselves in this. And I am by no means perfect, even as a qualified naturopath and nutritionist, because I think I'll probably do an episode on this, but if you've seen a lot of my content, you will have seen that I've been dealing with some fussy food habits with my little one for a really long period of time. And it's something that we are very much in a better space with, but always contend with. So I am by no means perfect. I'm just like you. I make these mistakes as well, but it's really good to highlight them because then we can see ourselves in these examples. So some of the things that we might be doing is giving too many and suboptimal carbohydrates. This might mean things like white bread sandwiches, chips or hot chips. Packet snack foods are a really big trip up. And they don't necessarily, any of these, have the optimal nutrition. They might be full of hidden sugars, additives and salt. Or we might be giving lots of pasta, bread, rice without being balanced with appropriate vegetables and sources of protein. And part of that giving lots of pasta, bread and rice might be to do with fussiness. So that's when I will do an episode in the future about how to combat that, because I haven't got into that trap, but I have definitely got into the trap of providing him the foods that he will eat, or providing him the foods that he will most likely eat, rather than continuing to challenge those fussy eating habits. The second thing that we might be making the mistake with is about the lack of protein. Protein is the biggest building block that we have. And it means that if we have meals that include protein, we'll be kept fuller for longer. And for our little ones, they will sustain good naps and overnight sleep, not to mention the role in development and all sorts of things. Increased sugar might be another thing that we're doing. And once they get the taste for it, I find they definitely want more. It can be a quick fix in terms of hunger, and obviously they will gravitate toward it, but it does have its own issues, which could include problems with teeth. It affects our immune systems, our energy, and it can affect their concentration. And a lot of this goes for adults as well, of course. We can definitely have an affinity for sugar, particularly if we're tired, but then it can have other consequences in the body as well. Another thing we might be doing is giving a lot of pre-packaged foods and not enough fresh foods. And again, I have fallen into this habit sometimes because he has shown fussy eating behaviors. So rather than offering him things, particularly when we're out, I have gone to pretzels or popcorn, whatever it may be, rather than continuing to offer those things. So have you ever noticed that your child, you give them a snack and then just a few minutes later, they are wanting more? This could be because the snack has no real nutrition, nothing that will fill them up for long enough. That's why protein is so important. You might also have the fussy eating thing, which is a real thing for us. And trust me, I have learned a lot of strategies along the way. So that's just a starting point in terms of what are some things that we could be doing less optimally, but we want to make sure that we're doing better. So we might be giving too many of those things and not aware, and we get into some really bad habits. We want to make sure that they're eating optimally, and we are challenging those things that we could be getting into habits of doing not so good things. Here's some snack ideas, and this is just one part of a solution that I wanted to give you. I'm not going to go into main meals and all that sort of thing, but in terms of snack ideas, because it's so easy to lean on packet foods or quick, easy food solutions, here are some ideas. So some really good quality nut butter in celery, whether it is peanut butter or there's some really great quality nut butters that you can get with celery. You might make a trail mix, or in my day it was called scroggin, which has got all sorts of different types of nuts, maybe some goji berries, some coconut flakes, maybe even some cacao nibs, and you can make it with your little ones. We did that a lot in the final year of kindergarten. Obviously, we couldn't take it to kindergarten due to the allergies with nuts of other children, but we did it, take it, and I always had it on the go, and it's a really great high-protein snack that you can give as soon as they are hungry. I also make my own protein balls or bliss balls. Now, this became something that I really lent on because my little one didn't have any main form of protein from the time he was 1 to 2 years old. He never had chicken, red meat, or fish, which was incredibly stressful for me. He used to eat everything when he was little, but at that point, everything changed. So I had to be really creative, and I still offered things, but I also hid things as well. So I made protein balls using ground up nuts, and I would also add vegetables. So I would add raw beetroot and put them in the Thermomix and make balls that way. Or you can do it with spinach, and I'd call them, you know, dinosaur balls or green balls, and we'd make them together, but I just hide the vegetable sauce as I snuck it in at the end. You might also keep offering eggs, even if they say they don't like eggs. You might use these as a snack, but try them in different ways. My little guy went off eggs for a while, so we've had to be really creative with how we present that to him. So he knows that my husband does a lot of international work, and he's been to China, and we both have many times. So we talk about Chinese eggs for whatever reason. It's the way that Chinese do it. I don't know why the old Chinese eggs, but that is what works, and that is something that's of interest to him. You might also do cut up cheese and celery. Platters are my new go-to. I'm finding that I'm doing different platters with all different foods, and when it's there in front of us and we're all eating from the same platter, he's trying new food. So you might put platters with cheese, fruit, nuts, cut up veggie sticks, hummus. Hummus and veggie sticks are an excellent snack that is full of protein. I have so many more ideas around fussy eaters and how to incorporate excellent nutrition. If you work with me, you definitely get me to analyze their diet, and specifically we work out what is the best way for you to optimize your child's diet and nutrition. So there is heaps of information about the relationship between feeding and sleep. The most common mistakes that we make around feeding, especially when they feed, and the pitfalls that we could be making with the content of their food. During this podcast, you've learned about the important role between feeding and what is ideal to feed your child to optimize their sleep, growth, and development. Thank you for listening to this episode. I hope that it has helped you understand the importance of timing and content of nutrition when talking about solids and milk feeds with your little one. Now, while I have you, I wanted to let you know that my membership, the Sleep Collective, is opening in just a couple of weeks. Goodness, I have a lot of work to do before then. My membership has been going for over 18 months, and it's a place where you will find knowledge, community, and support. It is a written and content video library of just snippets of information which are totally digestible. It's not overwhelming at all, because let's face it, who has the time to watch hour-long videos each week? Here you will find all your solutions to any sleep challenge that you could be experiencing. It might be catnapping, night waking, early rising, your little one standing in the cot. Maybe you're embarking on a nap transition, 2-to-1 nap transition, dropping the nap. Maybe they're starting childcare. I also have sections on medical conditions such as reflux, colic, and how to support the immune system. And I also have elements about nutrition, such as fussy eating. So the doors are going to open incredibly soon. And within the Sleep Collective, we also have a private Facebook group. And this is where we troubleshoot any sleep challenge that's going to come your way. You can get an answer pretty much instantaneously from me. And I also do weekly lives where I do a training of whatever topic is relevant at the time. It's my 5 stages to successful sleep, and I would absolutely love to have you in the Sleep Collective. So jump to the website because I want you to get on the wait list so you know when doors open. Go to the website, theholisticsleepproject.com, click on the membership tab and put your name on the wait list. Until then, happy sleeping. I will speak to you next time.
If you enjoyed this episode, learned something or felt moved by a topic that was discussed, please share it with another parent who you think would enjoy this episode. Also, don't forget to leave a review on the platform where you listen to this podcast so more families can be empowered about their child's sleep. Make sure to follow me on Instagram so you can get more sleep tips that will help you improve your child's sleep today. And head to my website if you would like to work one-on-one with me. Until next time, happy sleeping.